All right. Supreme Court of the State of Nebraska is now open for the transaction of business. Draw nigh, all ye having business with this honorable court, and ye shall be heard. God save the State of Nebraska and this honorable court.
Thank you. You may be seated. Good morning to everyone. We will begin this morning with introductions from the court. I am Mike Hebekin, the Chief Justice, and now by order of seniority as to service on the court, the other members of the court will introduce themselves.
Good morning, I'm Lindsay Miller-Lerman.
William Castle, good morning.
Stephanie Stacy, good morning.
Good morning, I am Jeff Funk.
Jonathan Papik, good morning.
And John Freidenberg.
Thank you, members of the court. Our first case this morning is State v. Castillo-Rodriguez. Mr. Porto, good morning to you. And Mr. Ralph, good morning to you. Do either of you have any questions before we begin? Then Mr. Porto, you may approach and you may proceed.
Thank you. I'd like to reserve 2 minutes if possible. May it please the court, my name is Mark Porto. I'm here today on behalf of my client, the appellant, Selvin Castillo-Rodriguez. Mr. Castillo-Rodriguez was arrested on October 22nd, 2021, on the charges that ultimately led to his conviction and sentence in this case, and he remained there in jail through the date of his sentencing on May 24th, 2022, a period of 215 days by my calculation. All we are asking for in this appeal is for Mr. Castillo-Rodriguez to get credit for all of the 215 days that he was in jail pending his sentencing. That's it. Mr. Castillo-Rodriguez posted, his family posted bond for him, attempted to, on October 26th of 2021. Immediately at that time, Mr. Castillo-Rodriguez was placed in, had an immigration hold and was then placed technically in the custody of immigration authorities. But also on October 26th, on that same day, the county court in Hall County, Judge Wetzel, issued a writ of habeas corpus ad prosecutendum ordering the Immigration and Customs Enforcement and Removal to transfer Mr. Castillo-Rodriguez from immigration custody to the Hall County Department of Corrections on or before December 9th of 2021, which was the scheduled date of Mr. Castillo-Rodriguez's preliminary hearing.
Our record shows that that writ was signed by the court and filed in the state court criminal matter. What does our record tell us about what happened after that? What, if anything, in our record suggests that the writ was ever served or issued to ICE or to anyone, to any federal authority, and what in our record, if anything, suggests that it was ever complied with?
Right. There is nothing in the record. I don't believe there is anything in the record that answers those technical questions.
Are you asking us to assume it?
Yes, and I think that that's a logical assumption given the fact that Mr. Castillo-Rodriguez, everybody agrees, was in custody and then did appear for all of the scheduled proceedings despite being technically in immigration custody after he posted bond. And so I think that it's a fair inference that something must have happened, the writ, to get him to be able to participate in the state court proceedings if he was in...
Was he statutorily in jail as a result of these criminal proceedings?
He was in jail. He was arrested as a result of the charges that ultimately led to his sentencing in this case. And in Section 47503, which is the statute that governs credit for time served. It simply says, it doesn't mention the word bond, importantly. Never. It's not in that statute. It says a person should be given credit for time spent in jail as a result of the criminal charges for which the jail term is imposed. And here we have, on October 26th, we have an order from a Hall County court judge ordering the immigration authorities to transfer Mr. Castillo Rodriguez back to state custody. And further, in the second paragraph of that writ, says in no uncertain terms that he will remain in state custody until the conclusion of his case and all sentencings.
Isn't that required language under this type of writ? Just so, basically, so the federal authorities have an understanding that the state will not release them?
Perhaps, but at the end of the day, there's an order from a state court judge saying this person will remain until this case, he will remain in custody until this case and all sentences imposed as a result of this case are concluded.
You are relying, are you not, upon the language of the order?
Of the writ?
Of the writ.
In part.
I mean, without the writ, he had bonded out, and ICE apparently took custody of him. You're not asserting, are you, that even if ICE had placed him in the Hall County Jail, that without the writ, he would not have been in custody as a result of the criminal charge in the Hall County case, would he?
I think that likely depends on, in part at least, why there was an immigration hold. If the immigration hold is the result purely of this person is not a citizen, and based on these charges, you know, we believe that this person may be deportable, for example, and they're holding them for those proceedings. I think then that, and under a circumstance like that, then the argument could certainly be made that the person is in custody as a result of the criminal charges, even if the hold is technically from immigration as opposed to the state.
But circling back to Judge Stacy's question, we don't know anything about that, do we?
We don't know anything about that. I would concede that. But I don't know whose burden that, I don't know that that's necessarily the defendant's burden to produce that information.
I'm sorry to interrupt.
That's okay.
If the immigration hold or the ICE hold, however we're referring to that, if it had anything to do with the criminal charges, certainly you would have made a record of that.
Well, that's easier said than done when we don't, these are two completely different worlds, and we don't always have the information necessary to know why a person has a hold.
But you can see that our record doesn't tell us the reason for the ICE hold, and so there's no way to make an assumption that it is related in any respect to the criminal charges for which he was sentenced.
Yes, I would concede that. But what everybody also agrees is that Mr. Castillo Rodriguez was in the Hall County Jail for this entire period of time. And we also know that Judge Wetzel ordered the federal government to transfer Mr. Castillo Rodriguez to state custody for these charges, where he would remain in explicit, unambiguous terms that he would remain there until all aspects of his case are concluded.
Let's slightly vary the facts to explore your argument just a little. Assume your client was arrested as he was, he's in jail, he bonds out and is released and goes out and is subsequently arrested for a different criminal charge. And technically he's still bonded out on the charge that we're talking about, but he's back in jail and doesn't post bond on the new charge. You would agree he does not get credit for that period of time on the original charge?
Yes, yes.
Okay, so circling back to my original question, it really comes down to the existence of and the language of the writ.
In large part, I would agree with that, but that case is much easier because in that situation, the case law is very clear. You cannot get credit for two cases at one time, referring to state cases.
You would have a harder argument if there wasn't a writ, I think. If it was, I bonded out, now ICE is holding me in some jail somewhere, perhaps in this county, that would be a harder argument, but because there's a writ, you're saying that the county court took possession or control over or custody over the inmate and ordered that he be held pending this case.
Absolutely. And that's what happened.
So you're irrelevant to whether ICE is holding for whatever reason. your strongest argument is the writ. Is that?
I would agree with that. And that is because the writ, the language in the writ is so clear. This person will, you must transfer this person into state custody, and this person will remain there until, as a result of these charges, until this case is done. That is very clear. And we know that that happened, to address Justice Stacey's question again. We know that that must have happened because obviously Mr. Castillo-Rodriguez participated in all the state court proceedings, which he would not have been able to do.
Do we know that it happened with no gaps? I mean, you're arguing that you get all the time that he was in jail, and I realize it's kind of a fiction here because he's in the same place for the entire time, but is there the possibility of some gap, and how do we know how long that gap was?
Right, and it gets complicated because Hall County, this is not in the record, but the Hall County Department of Corrections has contracts with the immigration authorities to house immigration detainees. And so whether he's technically in Hall County custody and whether he's technically in ICE custody and what day that transfer occurred, is a little bit murky, but ultimately, it's...
Well, they would have to pay you. You have some contract. They would have to pay Hall County, would they not?
Presumably, and then that gets into, questions of incentive structures for the jail and this person that ultimately is sitting in the same jail cell.
So what do we do about that murkiness here?
Well, I think what you do is impose a burden on the state. If they don't want this person to get credit for a period of time the person is sitting in custody, then it's up to the state to show that they were not in specific days.
What is your authority for that?
Well, that's my answer to Justice Papik's question, is I think that's what this court should ultimately do. It is not a good practice, I would argue, for defense attorneys to be forced in the position of moving to revoke their own client's bond so they get credit for a period of time that they're sitting, everybody agrees they're sitting in jail. I don't think that is what this court should strive for, and I don't think that's what this court should interpret.
Take a stab at what your authority would be for the court for the state to bear that burden.
Well, when there's a question, when a person is sitting in jail, when there's no question that a person is sitting in jail, questions that turn on whether this person is in custody, whether they're in state custody or whether they're in immigration custody, when we know that this person is in jail, I would argue the burden should be on the state to.
And why is that? Could you help us?
Well, because they have access to more ready access to all that information.
Does the law impose in a conventional a failure to bring someone to trial case impose the burden on the state to run the numbers?
Yes, I believe so. When it comes to, you're talking about questions of speedy trial and things mm-hmm. of that nature. Yes, the burden is on the state when it comes to showing that the speedy trial clock is not run.
What impact does the revocation of the bond have, if any, in this factual situation?
I don't think it should have an impact because of the what I was indicating before. The 47503 does not mention the word bond. I see I'm out of time. I may answer the question.
You may.
Okay. 47503 does not mention the word bond. It just says as a result of these charges. So that's one. But even if bond is the critical question, whether or not the person has technically posted bond or not, the writ, I think, clearly would serve to overcome the posting of bond because it expressly again says this person must be returned to state custody and they will remain there until the sentence is completed, and that's what happened here. So ultimately, we would ask that the courts reverse this and remand with instructions to provide Mr. Castillo-Rodriguez for the time he spent in jail as a result of this case, which is 215 days.
Is it fair to say that the practice in the past, up to this point, that the existence of the bond has been determinative on this issue? Not in this specific situation, but in other situations where you're on multiple mm-hmm. charge or something like that?
Yes, and that's why we ultimately remove bond, but this case is a perfect example of why that's not.
You're asking us to basically change the practice as it is right now.
Yes, I think it's a practice that's not based on the statute. It's just based on the way things have been done up until now, and I don't think it's correct. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Ralph, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Got my water.
May it please the court, my name is Austin Ralph. I represent the state of Nebraska. Sole issue presented by this appeal is whether the district court properly denied credit for time served to Castillo Rodriguez for the period in which he had bonded out in this case, but apparently remained in jail pursuant to federal ICE custody in a writ of habeas corpus ad prosequendum. As set forth in my brief, and as I will detail here shortly, we think the district court got it right, and that being the only issue, we ask this court to affirm the judgment. So just preliminarily, it is a question of law. It's a de novo review. 47503, I think, is the applicable statutory language, considering we're talking about jail sentences. And the language of 47503 says you get credit when the time spent in jail is, quote, as a result of the criminal charge for which the jail term is imposed. And I don't think that happened here because the defendant bonded out. Once he bonded out, they then used, he's taken into federal ICE custody, and then a writ of habeas corpus ad prosequendum is used. My understanding, I hadn't was not familiar with that writ. My understanding of it, looking at the federal cases and everything else, is that it essentially borrows a prisoner from one jurisdiction to another, and because of that limited function, the jurisdiction, the primary jurisdiction, remains with the sending sovereign. In this case, that would be the federal government, because the defendant had bonded out and then been taken into ICE custody. And the receiving sovereign...
What does jurisdiction have to do with whether someone is in jail as a result of?
Well, it basically comes down to the custodial situation. It's maybe a legal fiction, or however you want to call it. Custody remained with ICE, as opposed to the state of Nebraska, or Hall County in this particular instance. And I guess because of that, that's one of the factors for saying that the time spent in jail was not as a result of the charge for which he was ultimately sentenced.
I'm going to ask you the same question that I asked opposing counsel, sure. And that is, on this record, how do we know the effect of the writs in this case? Whether we know they were signed by the court and filed in the court case, how do we know they were issued? How do we know the response, if any, of the federal authorities? And what impact, if any, do the federal regulations that govern these compliance with these writs, what impact does that have on our analysis?
Well, first, as far as the record question, I think it is an assumption, but it would be a fair assumption that the writ was served and that the federal government accepted it and then produced the prisoner, because the prisoner was ultimately produced. And notably as well, the very
produced where? You mean showed up in court?
Yeah, showed up in court. And notably, I think the very first pages of the Bill of Exceptions was the February 10th, 2022 proceedings. And the prisoner did not show up. And they said, you know, basically the court's like, well, what's the deal? He's not produced. Well, the Office of the Prosecuting Attorney said, we will do the writ. We will prepare the writ and we'll get him here. Indicating, I think, that the writ was necessary, that he was actually in federal ICE custody. And then thereafter, he was produced at the state court proceedings. So I do think it is a fair assumption that the writ was served and was necessary based on how the prosecution and approached it, and then how he was present at each
of them. Might be the same question. Who's supposed to get the written record for our review?
Well, I mean, generally, it's the appellant's burden to produce the record. I guess
the writ
is
in the record, though, isn't it?
The writ is in the record, yes.
How do we know the date of transfer? The writ refers to December. The first writ refers to December 9th.
Yes.
How do we know what happened prior to December 9th or on December 9th?
Well, I'm not entirely sure. And it's odd because I don't think the writs were actually maybe used as they are supposed to be. There were actually three writs, if you look at Justice, not just the two in the transcript. But my understanding of the writ is that you obtain temporary physical custody of the prisoner until you're done. So I don't know why there were multiple writs.
Does it matter? I'm still back here on, is our record give us everything we need?
Well, I mean, I think it does, because the district court properly denied credit for time served, essentially because it wasn't as a result of the charge in this case. We're talking about federal ICE custody and the writ.
Who generally bears the burden to show either entitlement or lack of entitlement for credit for time served?
I don't think this court has ever explicitly stated that. It seems to me that it would be everybody's burden. It's a question of law. It's purely based on, you know, numbers and facts in the record.
It's everybody's burden. Have we ever said?
No, I'm just sort of interpreting it from.
Is the jurisprudence around speedy trial relevant to the legal question as to who needs to prepare the record for to permit us to analyze this thoroughly without assumption?
Offhand, I would say no. I'd have to think about that a little bit more. So my answer would be no.
So you're asking us essentially that the burden ought to be on the defendant.
I mean, sure.
Then why should that be?
Well, I'm looking at State v. Clark and other cases where this court has basically said, I guess the inference was that, you know, it's easily established number.
An objective number.
An objective number.
As established by the record.
As established by the record,
but
yes.
But we need to know who makes the record.
Right. I guess I don't have an answer other than...
Would the burden be on whoever's asking for the change in the number? If the court is determining a number, wouldn't the burden be on whichever party is wanting that number to be different than what the court's asserting?
Yes, that would make sense, yes.
And in terms of who has superior knowledge, at least as to where the defendant was at any point in time, doesn't the defendant, presumably in the absence of an incompetent defendant, know where he or she was?
Yes.
And then, of course, the legal effect of that may be a different question. The burden
sure.
may fall to someone else to show the legal effect, but presumably these folks who are in custody know where they are at
sure.
every point.
But here, well, here he was in the Hall County Jail.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
Here he was in the Hall County Jail. Everybody
acknowledges that.
Yes. Everybody knows, or does the record show there's no dispute?
I'm not sure that there's a difference between the two here, but
Is there a dispute? The writ says that she'd be taken into custody or delivered for the specific hearing and for each day thereafter as needed by the proceedings. So you had mentioned there's no need for three writs. The first writ should take care of the whole thing. Does that writ deliver possession or custody of the inmate to Hall County Court for the duration of the proceeding? Or is it stop once that first proceeding's over and starts again when there's another hearing?
I mean, theoretically, I think it could have, but as I understand what happened here, they were using it essentially as a transport order for an individual proceeding. So the assumption, again, an assumption, is that they returned him when maybe they didn't necessarily have to the custody of ICE. And
again, being perhaps a fiction in the sense
right.
that he
still
may never have left
right.
where he physically was.
Right. He's still in the Hall County Department of Corrections facility.
Presumably the jail...
I'm sorry. No,
you've interrupted again.
No, that's all right.
Presumably the jail records would show
they would.
Whether ICE was being billed for that day or
they
not.
Would. Yes.
But we don't have that in our record, correct?
We do not. And in this particular case, getting back to Justice Castle's point about the defendant knowing where he's at, the defendant also would have access to the immigration records, which the prosecutor, theoretically, I don't think would have, would be another
So
point.
Therefore we know. Is that the argument?
Right.
He knows, therefore we know?
Well, he would know so he could produce those records as far as immigration proceedings.
Could this be remanded to make a record?
I guess I don't see why not. I don't necessarily think it's required because, like I said, we think it's clear from what we have that it was not as a result of this charge. And I think to illustrate that, I was trying to come up with, I think the best way to illustrate that is if you do everything hypothetically that you do on October 26th, which is he post bond, he's taken into ICE custody, then he is transferred through this writ. 3 days later, immigration says, hey, you know, we're not going to proceed with immigration proceedings. Do with them what you will. He would have been released on bond because his bond was still posted. And that, to me, illustrates that it wasn't as a result of this charge that he was in jail.
In the hypothetical.
Yeah. And because it wasn't as a result of this charge, I think we can say he was properly denied credit. And I did cite, I see I'm out of time, but didn't find a lot of case law addressing these scenarios, but I did find Alvarez v. State. I think that does support our position here as well.
Is that the
Indiana Court of Appeals from 2020, I believe, was the date on that, basically adopting that rationale that it was as a result of the federal ICE custody as opposed to the state charge for which he had bonded out.
Did they have a better record?
Well, I can't tell that necessarily from the opinion. Unless this court has further questions, we'd ask that you affirm. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have any time for rebuttal? Thank you. We have no time for rebuttal, counsel. That concludes arguments in State versus Castillo-Rodriguez. So you are excused. And the next case today is State versus Hines. Mr. Piccolo.